imagine this opening. You and I sitting there. The opening of this movie could have been amazing. Think of it.
Yeah,
so girl walking down the street, it's Christmas time, the Christmas lights, she's on her phone, guy's behind her, he's on her phone, she thinks he's stalking her, and then, of course, what happens? She gets offed in a non-ceremonial way because there's little impact.
Yeah, very, very little impact. She's stabbed with an icicle, which could be, it could be fun.
They could have stabbed her through the fucking neck and had blood squirting all over the side of the fucking house. It would have been amazing.
The Epic Film Dies Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. And man, it's gonna get nasty in here tonight, I feel, ladies and gentlemen. I, of course, am Epic Film.
I don't know what country you're from, Nick, or what you're attempting to do with your accent there. But I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
That's
light it. Your candles. Put on the Christmas music.
Ooh, baby.
Make sure all of your Christmas lights are on. Christmas trees plugged in. Prepare yourselves. We're going to be talking about something Christmas related, and you want to be in the mood. Maybe even put on some Bing Crosby on your old record player.
Ooh.
You know? Get in the Christmas spirit. We haven't been in the Christmas spirit, Nick, as I was saying to you. As we were doing some pre-roll stuff earlier, we haven't really been talking any Christmas-related content very often.
It's true.
This month. Usually I harass you with Home Alone 2-related information.
Oh, my Lord.
I did that earlier this year with a GIF, and Boy Sauce, he's constantly doing Elf movie parties at Alamo Drafthouse. So
now you're going
down. All Christmased out, I don't know, but tonight we are going to talk about something Christmas-related that I'm just chomping at the bit to get to.
And we don't want to delay much longer, Justin, but we are also joined by the one, the only God of podcasting. Ladies and gentlemen, He's here. He's everywhere. He's squirting it freely.
You got to squirt that freely.
Loy Sauce in the house.
Ho, 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 gents. Nick did say it was going to get nasty in here. And he's right.
No nastier than it normally gets. But I don't want to take up any more time, because I know that Justin is so excited to talk about this movie. But you told me I have to play a little something before we get started, right, Justin? You told me I had to play a special sound drop just for you.
Well, there's something we do on the show every week before we get to our review. Boy Sauce, he's kind of like that one guy, you know, that tells people what the movie's about.
I want to
in case
see
they don't know what it's about.
Strangled.
Yeah, he needs to do that first, and, well, we'll see what happens from there.
Ooh.
Black Christmas, 2019. This is the second remake of a film, Bob Clark's perennial classic, Black Christmas from 1974, a groundbreaking film because it is considered to be the first holiday slasher that inspired the likes of Halloween, April Fool's Day, President's
Friday the
Day, Easter Sunday. What other holiday slashers can I talk about?
Loy Sauce Day?
Sure.
That movie would just be a whole bunch of kids just getting their heads cut off.
Yeah, of course. The original Black Christmas is one of the very few horror movies. I love horror movies, but very few of them chill my blood, shake me to my core, actually genuinely terrify me. The original Black Christmas does. It was remade in 2006 as a schlock, complete gore-soaked schlock epic. That was not very well received. Bombed. We talked about the trailer for Black Christmas 2019 And I mentioned that I was not at all opposed to the idea of another Black Christmas remake. Sometimes it's a good idea to take a horror classic and modernize it for a new generation. This version takes place in Hawthorne College during the holidays, where Riley, played by Imogen Poots, and the rest of the Mu Kappa Epsilon sorority are preparing for the festivities, but their Christmas cheer is cut short when a masked killer begins sending ominous text messages to them, stalking them across campus, and ultimately killing them off one by one. And now Riley and her sorority sisters have to fight for their lives. It's very much a modern feminist take on this tale. Sisters taking it back for themselves, and it's meant to be empowering and all of that. The film is co-wrote by April Wolf and Sophia Takal. Sophia Takal is an indie director. April Wolf is of the Switchblade Sisters podcast. So you have women writing and directing the film, which I think is great. I think it's something we should be championing. I think we need more women in the director's chair and in the writer's room in Hollywood. This film sucks shit.
Play it. Play it. Just fucking play it right now.
Shut up! Shut up! Shut the fuck up and let me do my job.
I can't wait to hear this. I really can't.
This movie decided to open its asshole, stick it firmly in my fucking face, into my mouth, and take a giant shit right down my fucking throat. The new Black Christmas film, Boy Sauce, which should have been titled All White Men Are Evil, is reprehensible. It's a poorly made travesty. Its attempts to cash in on the Me Too movement are so fucking heavy-handed, so disingenuous, and on the nose. Yes, I did say this on my Facebook page, and I'm saying it again here on the show. You'd think that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer him fucking self led the way. This film lacks any scares. It lacks any suspense. It lacks any genuine tension that any legitimate, decent, crappy, run-of-the-mill, it came on at midnight in 1984 slasher film has. I can't believe how bad this movie is. You could remove the title from this thing and I would still be just as angry about it, because the slasher genre, ladies and gentlemen, the horror genre deserves so much better from this. And when you look at who's involved, you look at the talent, you look at the director, the writers, you look at Blumhouse, who's churned out the best Halloween sequel, arguably, of all time. You see just everyone on the books who had something to do with this remake, and it's extremely upsetting to me. Boy Sauce, you yourself, you've been very outspoken on social media. You've come out and said you are a male feminist. This movie is targeted towards a feminist audience.
Well, I think that, yes, I think there's something to be said for, this movie is not made for me. This movie is made for teenage girls. I'm a feminist, you know? Like I said, I think it's something that we should be championing, that we have a film featuring women role models and written and directed by women. I think that's fantastic. But this movie is nothing new in terms of that. I think there are many things in the film that make this, it seems like there's a pretense where it's like, we're the feminist version of Black Christmas, you know? Like, horror has its fair share of, you know, gross sexist tropes, but it's also been a vehicle to relay progressive themes and ideas. You know, Night of the Living Dead back in 1968 was groundbreaking for making a Black man the hero. The whole idea of the final girl was born from the slasher genre. Hell, in 1974, the original Black Christmas had a subplot about abortion, which is extremely feminist for the time. And that film featured very strong female leads. So the idea that this film, the dialogue is just teeth grating and toe curling and so ridiculously on the nose and unsubtle and obvious, it's astonishing. Because social commentary can, can be subtly weaved into the proceeding so that it can be enjoyed as a story for first and a message second. For example, Get Out, also produced by Blumhouse, is a film about a myriad things. It's about, you know, race relations and appropriation and, you know, the oppression of African Americans in history. But the horror of that film came from the situations and the characters, and everything else was subtext. But here, the film's message comes at the expense of developing characters, establishing a sense of mystery or suspense, and it's numbing after a while when all of the characters in the film talk exactly the same, inhabit the exact same worldview, and talk about the same thing nonstop. And I know that the characters in the film, you know, it may be realistic because there very much are these woke, you know, college-age liberals, you know, feminists who basically say, you know, fuck the patriarchy, burn it all down, and that's fine. But every character in this film talks about nothing else but let's put men down. And I'm not
all of them.
And I'm not
every single one of them. Had the film conveyed its messages and themes with care and quality, it wouldn't have bothered me one bit. The film centers around rape culture, something that's extremely serious right now, something that should not be mishandled and played around with or acted like it's a joke. And in my opinion, this movie sends the wrong message to a lot of the young girls that are going to be going to see this movie, or that should have gone to see this movie that didn't go to see it, opening weekend. It was done without any kind of nuance or genuine understanding of the problem. Now, I think a lot of this comes from the fact that I did a little bit of reading after I saw the film, and I walked out infuriated that director Sofia Takal admitted to Entertainment Weekly. She was so used to making indie movies where it takes years and years to get them off the ground. But in this case, this thing was brought to her in February or March of last year. No script, no anything. So she had to rush to get this thing done faster than anything she's ever done.
Yeah, they
so
shot the film, it in like 20 days. And
yeah,
it shows.
So the film was written, casted, filmed, post-production, everything in 8 months. And yes, it shows. I have zero problems, Loisos, zero, with a feminist film. A feminist horror film? Fuck yeah, dude. Bring it on. In today's culture, I would love that had it been done correctly. But in this case, the film, to me at least, from my perspective, is saying not only are all white men dumb, stupid, or evil, they're worthless and they can be killed off with a shot of an arrow. And that's the end of them. Well, like they're totally, I mean, I get it. This has been done to other people in other movies. I get it. But in this case, it hit me the wrong way.
You see, like on Twitter, I posted my thoughts about this film and people were saying that I was mansplaining and that I,
are you serious?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wait, really? Wait, what did they say to you?
I've just been getting tweets insinuating that I hate women and that, you know, so whatever. I did not hate this film because I'm a man. I don't hate it because it's a remake. I don't hate it because it's rated PG-13. I hate it because it's a bad movie. We discover throughout the film that the violence being committed towards these sorority sisters is being carried out by this fraternity on campus. The film tries to make a point about rape culture and toxic masculinity on college campuses, which is a hot button issue right now. I mean, it's something that's been going on for, you know, far too long. This frat culture, something that's been in the news and the headlines. I think it's great that a film is trying to tackle these issues, but it completely bungles it because you have this fraternity and then you have the only other white male character who is a boyfriend of one of the sisters. They have this part in the film where he basically tries to say, like, not all men are rapists. And the movie frames it in a way where all the sisters get really angry at him. And of course, the movie sides with them. Like, he gets thrown out of the house by his girlfriend, and then he comes back in and instantly gets killed.
And then his ass gets fucking mowed down.
Which wouldn't be so
arrow.
The film is hollow and it's stupid and it's devoid of any excitement or terror or titillation or anything we go to horror movies for. Because the movie opens pretty promisingly I guess.
Imagine this opening. You and I sitting there. The opening of this movie could have been amazing. Think of it.
Yeah.
Girl walking down the street. It's Christmas time. The Christmas lights. She's on her phone. Guy's behind her. He's on her phone. She thinks he's stalking her. And then, of course, what happens? She gets offed in a non-ceremonial way because there's little impact.
Yeah, very, very little impact. She's stabbed with an icicle, which could be, it could be fun.
It could be fun. They could have stabbed her through the fucking neck and had blood squirting all over the side of the fucking house. It would have been amazing.
But that would have made it an R rating.
Well, we know this film was originally shot and meant to be R rated. So, I mean, there could have been a better film here in many ways, but the opening is lackluster, lame. The whole snow angel thing is so cool, such a great concept, and the way it's played out is one of the most disappointing things I've seen in an opening of any horror film in the past 5 years.
Well, yeah, and I'm not saying that the movie needed gore to be good, but it would have given us
something. Of course not.
It would have given us something to admire and appreciate.
Well, it's supposed to knock us, it's supposed to be that one hit that nails us right at the forefront that says, yo, we're going to really do something cool here. You know, you have to have that really great opening in these modern slashers that really pushes you over the edge. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm in. Because you're 50-50 in modern horror films. Either you nail the audience within that first 5 to 10 minutes or you don't. In this case, the movie fails to grab you. It fails to grip you and pull you in. And the kill is lame. It's bloodless. There's zero suspense or tension. And it's just flat out shot horribly.
And the film takes its most effective jump or jolt moment directly from Exorcist 3. And you get...
You had to go there, didn't you? God,
well, I mean, the film's full of kind of like little references like to the original Black Christmas and other films here and there. It really does nothing original on its own. I feel like we have to talk about the third act twist, because it's so outrageous, so commendably dumb, that it renders whatever point it's trying to make completely useless. And it actually is contradictory to the point that it's trying to make. Early on in the film, we're introduced to Cary Elwes' character. Yes, Cary Elwes is in this film as Professor Gelson. And he's teaching a class. Basically, he says a quote pertaining to the fact that women have their place in society, and it's hinted that, you know, it's behind men or at men's feet or whatever the quote is. And he asks the class, or he asks specifically Imogen Poots's character, what do you think the author was trying to convey with this quote? And she says, well, I think he, and he stops her and he's like, well, what makes you sure that quote was said by a man? And she starts to, you know, answer, and he says, it was actually a woman. And you think, okay, what point is the movie trying to make? And what little mystery there is, who could possibly be behind it all? So yes, Cary Elwes' character, the professor, is, I guess, the faculty leader of this fraternity that's involved in the killings. So it's hinted at early on in the movie that...
there's like a statue, a bust.
Of the school founder.
Which is a thing that's in front of a lot of big schools with founders of the schools, with people that, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, were a part of creating the school. This was protested and basically put away because of the fact that this guy was,
misogynist, racist,
or whatever. And they're using the blood. They're using this black goo from this bust for this fraternity.
So the black goo, yeah. So there, it's supernatural.
But make sure to reference the fact, Loisauce, that this shit is all referenced and brought up like way later in the movie, where we don't have any idea why this is a thing.
Yeah. So the it should be noted that the original Black Christmas and the 2006 Black Christmas, there's nothing supernatural in them at all. It is all real life horror, something that could really happen. Well, maybe the 2006, not so much, because it's ridiculously over the top. But the first Black Christmas is very much a grounded, gritty, somber piece of work. But this decides to go supernatural for some reason that I can't fathom. The black goo contains the spirit of the school founder. And during the fraternity initiation, Carrie always rubs the black goo all over the pledges' faces, and that turns them into violent woman haters.
Violent rapists.
Yes.
Violent woman haters, violent murderers, basically everything bad.
Yes, because the school founder believed that if women ever had an equal place in society, then it would be the men's job to, you know, put them in their place and whatever, commit horrible violence towards them. Which, it sounds like I'm making this up, but it's true. Like, we watched
you're not.
It.
You're not. We saw it. We watched it. We sat there. Within the first 25 to 30 minutes of this movie, I turned to you. I said something to you. And you, as the amazing, open-minded person that you are...
Well, you asked me, is it too early to call this movie a piece of shit? And I said, yes. Shush. Give it a chance.
And then I did. And then I did exactly what you said. And then I waited till the end of this movie, when it unveiled all of this nonsensical supernatural stuff, which in my opinion is just an excuse for the filmmakers to go, yeah, now we can kill white rich guys and no one's going to give a fuck because they're only doing bad things because it's supernatural.
Well, that's the problem that I have with the movie, because the film's message should be don't rape people.
Oh my God.
Like,
oh my god, that's such a horrible fucking theme.
I'm being serious here. Like, the film is trying to frame this narrative of there is a problem in college campuses, and it's that, you know, consent is not considered, women are abused. There is this culture around fraternity that is seeped in toxic masculinity. You know, we see it with Brock Turner and all of the news that comes out of college campuses of these people that, you know, rape women and they get away with it and all that stuff. So if the movie had dealt with that in a way that was mature and
thought through, developed,
but the
maybe
fact is
smart.
So if you had the fraternity of, you know, rapists and killers of women, then it would be satisfying for the sorority to fight back against them. But these men aren't doing it of their own volition. They're being possessed. There's a demonic influence that is causing them to do these things. And the movie never makes it clear if they know that going into the initiation. So we're meant to assume, like, these are innocent men who are under a supernatural influence to kill these women.
They're just white and very attractive. So, I mean, at face value, you're just like, oh, they're attractive, they're white,
they're rich, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
So the movie ends with the sorority sisters coming in to the initiation. They redo the fight scene from Anchorman where it's just like they come in with like shovels and
dude, they come
you know,
in a room
baseball
at the
bats
end, and they're spouting off one-liners and they're pretending like this is going to be this awesome epic ending to this movie that's going to be monumental and people are going to walk out being like, that was great.
But shot extremely poorly. It's rushed. It's not built up well. The fight choreography is like completely chaotic and it's not framed well. Nothing about it works. And then the movie ends with them locking the frat guys into the frat house and burning it down. So again, like, if these were actual, like, I mean, the frat guys are rapists and murderers, but they're rapists and murderers not of their own volition. Like, what if these were just like normal college guys? I don't know. Whatever. So the movie ends with the frat house and all of the fraternity brothers burning alive. And the movie just kind of ends. There's no resolution. It just ends with Imogen Poots kind of looking at the house and that's it.
On fire.
Yeah, I mean, it just has no impact. Like, whatever message the film was trying to convey gets very muddled. Like, it wants to be timely and topical, but it just does not have a solid thesis. And on top of that, the characters are not developed enough. You don't care about any of them, so you don't care who lives, who dies.
I don't care about any of these characters. And it's because of the fact that none of them are given the spotlight enough with any kind of heft in the writing department to give me anything that's really going to, you know, sit with me longer than the time that I'm sitting there watching the movie. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. The original Black Christmas is a movie that's near and dear to my heart. It's one of my favorite horror movies ever made. The 2006 remake, which I showed to Loy Sauce as soon as we got done watching this movie, for him to give him something to compare this to. Still, not a huge fan, but I enjoy it at face value.
It's way better than this. There's no sense of sisterhood with these characters. Like, even the 2006 film, even though it is mind-bogglingly stupid, it did a better job of creating a believable dynamic.
But it's fun. The thing about that movie is...
It did a much better job of creating a believable dynamic between its female characters, and it's also incredibly gory and over-the-top and fun, which this film is not.
It had a singular vision, and it decided on that vision, and it committed to that, and it gave us that movie. And that's the movie we got here. This just seemed like a jumbled mess. And my point that I was trying to get to, Saucy, was that I would not mind a movie of this nature that is taking the Black Christmas template of a movie that we all know and love. We all love it because of the fact that it has strong female characters. That's what we care about in that movie. Those characters are amazing. Margot Kidder, give me a fucking break. One of the strongest character actors in her time frame.
Well, and Olivia Hussey, too. Like, she's fantastic in the film. So
yes, my point is, this just didn't do it right. They rushed it. They didn't take their time. And Blumhouse, I'm blaming you. I am not going to sit here and blame the director 100%, though you took the film and you directed it. I'm not going to blame all of the writers, but you should have taken your time with this. What pisses me off the most about this movie is you took a title of a movie that your demographic will never pay attention to. This is not a Friday the 13th. This is not a Nightmare on Elm Street. This is not a Halloween where, you know, your demographic's going to be like, oh, I know what that is. You're taking the title of a movie that hasn't been thought of since the 70s, because let's face it, as you said earlier on in the review, no one went to go see the 2006 remake. You're just using it for face value. And to me, not only are you insulting the audience in that respect, you're insulting the audience by giving them a subpar product, by throwing this at a filmmaker that's totally capable of coming up with a good movie, who probably could have developed this concept in a way better way if you gave them time to do it. I know that Blumhouse just rushes things through. I know what their business model is, but Jason Blum, you should be ashamed of yourself. Trying to throw out there a woke movie, a topical movie, without giving it any substance. Don't hate on Loy Sauce. He is a feminist. Don't hate on him for calling the movie bad just because he's a male. Don't hate on me just because I'm white, because I didn't like the movie. That's what I'm getting a lot of, and it's like, dude, I didn't like the movie because it wasn't good. It has nothing to do with those things. I would feel the same way if all the bad guys in the movie were Asian characters or African-American characters. You just didn't develop anything properly, and it's a bad fucking movie, and it's insulting. No one should go see this movie. I'm glad it's not doing well. Loy Sauce, take the mic from me right now before I destroy it even further, because I fucking hated this movie.
Well, that's the thing. On Twitter, like, I'm seeing a lot of reactions from people who basically say, like, men should not have an opinion on this movie because it's not made for them. It wasn't made with them in mind. And I really do get that this movie is not aimed at me. It's aimed at, you know, young women who will go see it, and maybe they will feel empowered by it. But, you know, you also get April Wolf, the co-writer of the film, on Twitter saying, you know, like, LOL, men are crying because their fragile egos are being threatened by this movie. Blaming the colossal failure of your film on men for just being, you know.
Didn't this just happen with the Charlie's Angels reboot with Elizabeth Banks, like blaming Spider-Man movies? Like, stop blaming other factors. Just admit, like, it's not a good movie. You know, like, I'm okay with the themes. I love the themes. Like, seriously, if the themes are conveyed in a proper fashion and developed properly, and the characters are well written. I mean, dude, you have Imogen Poots in this movie, who is a fantastic talent, a brilliant talent. I love this girl. She's amazing in almost everything she does. You give her nothing to do in this movie. You give her a script with
no
horrible
character.
Dialogue. Zero character. She's honestly, just throwing it out there, she's bad in this movie. She is bad in this movie.
Yeah, if you want to see a good film about toxic masculinity that stars Imogen Poots that came out this year, watch The Art of Self-Defense. Much better, much more insightful.
She's amazing in that movie, which that movie will definitely be making its way into my top 10 of the year.
Yeah.
100%.
So when Imogen Poots is bad in your movie, you've got problems because you're not giving her enough to chew on. And there were shades of it there. Like, her character is a rape survivor, and you could have a lot of nuance in that role if you even bothered to write anything interesting for the characters to do, but they didn't. It's just bad. It's just...
Well, I hate this movie because it's badly written. It's badly directed. It's badly acted. It's badly perceived, and fuck you, Blumhouse, for putting this out the way you did, rushing it and putting some talent behind it that had no idea what they were getting themselves into and making them rush what they were doing just to get you something to put out at the holidays. I'm insulted in more ways than one here, and I feel like I can't speak for the female viewers that are going to see this movie, but I feel like some of them may also be offended as well. I mean, you're trying to give them something to root for, something they could relate to, and you're half-assing this shit. I mean, if you're going to actually do something like this, give it time, give it some respect, and let it sit there, and maybe take some time to think about what you want to do with it before you just throw it at the market and hope it'll stick. You made a bad decision. This film was one of the worst of the year, if not my worst of the year. I'm going to throw my rating on it right now. It's reprehensible. It's awful. It's number one, the worst horror film of the year. Again, what Loisaw said earlier on the show, you are perfect in saying this, Loisaw. Not only does it not deal with these topical things in a proper fashion, it has zero suspense, zero tension. The killers are mindless, masked, hooded, lamoid, fucking generic killers. We've seen them in every single horror movie that's direct to video. You couldn't come up with something better than this? Seriously? Like,
well, especially considering Billy is one of the most iconic horror villains.
Dude, the 2006 remake is a masterpiece compared to this. Out of the gate, I'm done with this. I don't want to talk about it ever again. Don't go see this movie. The highest non-recommendation from the Epic Film Guys on my end of the entire year, a 2 out of 10. It's a gigantic pile of shit. There's nothing redeeming about this movie other than maybe like 2 or 3 camera shots, which of course they should get because they have people of quality working on the movie. Don't go see it. I fucking hated it. Throw it in the trash and burn it to death.
Its message rings hollow and disingenuous. It robs the Black Christmas name to try to squeeze, I guess, some money out of horror fans, which I think is pretty despicable.
All of which are not going to see it anyways because it looks nothing like the movie they love. So you made a big mistake there anyways.
Yeah, I hated it as much as any movie we've ever reviewed on the show. I would rather get coal in my stocking than get Black Christmas 2019 on DVD in my stocking. 2 out of 10 from me. Don't go see this movie.
Wow. What? Wow.
I fucking hated it.
Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go ahead and we're going to spin over into a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Jumanji, The Next Level, Jumanji. The sequel to Welcome to the Jungle from 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago.
Hey, Jumanji. What the fuck is Jumanji? Hey. Hey, you, over there.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, you. That handsome guy with the white headphones. What the fuck? Why are they white? Did someone jizz all over him?
Oh, my God.
Be quiet. We're going to talk about a movie where there's a bunch of animals and some guys in the jungle. Oh, and that guy that's got biceps so big, you think they were giant balls ready to jizz all over someone's face.
Did we let him drink too much vodka tonight, Roy Sauce? Was that what it was?
I think we might have.
God damn it. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk Jumanji, The Next Level.
police shakeup as Ape Man strikes again.
There you are, Commissioner. There it is in black and white. This Ape Man is making a monkey of the police department.
That ox can't call me a monkey. Shut up, you baboon.
Now look here, Commissioner. You've got to catch that Ape Man.
Just a minute, Mr. Dill. We're doing the best we can. As a matter of fact, we suspect he's not an ape man, but a real gorilla.
Real gorilla, bah! Look here, Commissioner. You've got to catch that ape man. And if you don't, as head of the Citizens League, I'll have to demand your resignation. I don't want to make you any trouble, my friend. But this thing has gone far enough. As a matter of fact, it's gone too far. And something's gotta be done.
But, Mr. Dill, give me a chance. We're trying. After all, policemen are only human beings. You know how the newspapers build these things up.
I had 6 phone calls yesterday. 6 calls from the irate citizens demanding action. And I'm not going to be the goat.
But, Mr. Dill, nobody's asking you to be the goat. My men will catch this ape man or gorilla or whatever it is.
You're supposed to have an efficient police department, and yet you can't catch a third-rate hoodlum who masquerades as a monkey. Remember, Commissioner, this is your last chance. Good night.
But, Mr. Dill, let's understand each other on this.
That Dill sure has the chief in a pickle. I'd like to hit that ape man by the throat. I'd tear his ears off and gouge his eyes
out. Shut up, Tarzan. You're all wet.
How did you know?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, as always, for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. If you love us, if you like us, if you just want to get knee-deep in a bin full of Argyle socks like the sauce, head over to Apple Podcasts. Please drop us a beautiful, wonderful, amazing 5-star review. It really, really helps us out, pushes us up there in that wonderful Apple Podcast algorithm, and we would just eternally appreciate it forever. We'll send you loy sauce. I keep telling you people that, but nobody leaves us the reviews, so you're not going to get them. We're not sending them. You can't have them. He's ours. We're keeping him forever. He seems not interested.
Yes.
Yes. All right, so we are moving on into decidedly lighter fare from Black Christmas, and we're going to talk about Jumanji. I brought it back up.
Don't say it again.
You keep quieter.
Daddy's going to spank you with the belt now.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm blinded by looking at you as we record. You're wearing white headphones.
And I know. They're
blending into the back of your wall. I feel like I'm tripping my fucking balls off here.
If I didn't have any posters behind me, it would look really trippy. It'd look like my head was caved in on the sides. It'd look really, really weird. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Jumanji, The Next Level Loy Sauce. This is a sequel to Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which was a sequel to the original Jumanji from way back, starring Robin Williams.
It was kind of a sequel.
It was a sequel, goddammit. There's a whole thing where they go to his cabin that he had in the fucking middle of the movie.
Yeah, I don't really know how that makes sense, because Alan Parrish was sucked into the board game, and this is a video game.
Stop trying to logic your way around this and tell us what the movie's all about.
So, we pick things up with nervous and shy Spencer, played by Alex Wolff from Hereditary, and that's all I could think of when I was looking at him was Payman.
That mole.
Well, sure.
It's an iconic mole.
Yes. But he longs for the days when he was Dr. Smolder Bravestone, played by Dwayne Johnson, his avatar in the Jumanji video game that he and his friends discovered 3 years prior. So, wanting to feel strength and purpose again, Spencer returns to the world of the game with his friends Fridge, Martha, and Bethany going in after to search for him. But this time, Spencer's cranky grandfather, played by Danny DeVito, and his estranged friend Milo, played by Danny Glover, are sucked in as well. And now the players face new challenges as they find their avatars, as well as the rules of Jumanji, have changed.
Ooh, and Justin never saw Welcome to the Jungle, but I'm going to say it from the outset. I don't necessarily think that's detrimental here, because there's not a whole lot in terms of like picking up the story like that you really have to know from the first film, as long as you just know, oh, yeah, these people were all
sucked into the game once before and played the game. And
yeah, there's inside jokes and stuff that I was chuckling at, that like you references to the first film.
Right.
But aside from that, it's not like extremely necessary. It's not like you'll be lost if you haven't seen the first film, because
you definitely won't be,
because this is really more of the same. It's not better or worse than the original, in my opinion. It's just kind of more of the same. So however you felt about Welcome to the Jungle will determine how you feel about the next level. If you haven't seen the original, then I don't think it'll be detrimental for you here.
I mean, I'll come out of the gate right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. I wanted to pitch it down to Justin first.
Yeah. I mean, you told me basically not watching the first one is not going to really hurt, make or break, I should say, my viewing of the new one, because you had seen it prior to my viewing of the film. And I mean, perfect way to put this movie is it was a great way to spend a Sunday night. I mean, like, I had a great time at the movies. It was fun. It was silly. It was entertaining. Nothing more than that. It was pure popcorn fluff at its best, with really funny performances and a decent script. I mean, it was definitely, I would say, as one note as they get, but at the same time, there's enough there. I mean, it's a great family movie, I would say. A great movie you would take your kids to see on a Sunday afternoon. Give them some popcorn. You know, you just bought them fucking McDonald's and they're in a food coma, and you're like, hey, let's get the kids to fall asleep to a movie or whatever. I thought it was perfectly fine. I'm just saying, I thought it was fine. I thought it was, you know, decent popcorn blockbuster entertainment. And I'm going to tell you this much, though. God damn it. Danny DeVito needs to be in more movies, not in just small roles, not just for 20 minutes in your movie. He needs to be in your movie the entire fucking time, because Danny DeVito is a true national treasure and he's an icon. And who doesn't want to see Danny DeVito in every movie? I feel like Danny DeVito could show up in like every single movie. He could be in every single Oscar nominated movie that's going to be nominated, and he'll fit. He was a great dramatic actor, a great director, great comedian. I mean, the opening of the movie for me was my favorite, with him like falling all over the place and just being all of his is a great physical humor that we know him for.
Yeah, that was great.
I loved all of that.
And it was really nice. I mean, just coming off it from, you know, the first film, I mean, you get reintroduced to the four characters really, really quickly. And, you know, they don't try to do any real super heavy lifting or anything. I mean, we learn, you know, that Spencer and Martha had a relationship that he kind of went AWOL from at some point. And these four have all, you know, remained close, and, you know, they try to meet up apparently whenever they get back to their hometown, and that's when they can't find Spencer and they find out he's gone back into the game or whatever. And I like the little bits of character moments. I mean, none of these actors are really required to do much heavy lifting because most of their time is spent within the game as their avatars, which, I mean, Awkwafina fucking steals this movie for me. I don't know how anybody else feels about it, but because Awkwafina's new to the cast. Awkwafina wasn't in the first film.
Dude, the best Danny DeVito impression.
Holy
the
shit.
Entire
movie. She fucking steals the movie. Like, because, I mean, it's in the trailer, so it's not really too much of a spoiler, but they eventually get back into quote unquote their original avatars from when they were in the game the first time, because it all gets shuffled up. Jack Black has to be Fridge, which is fucking hilarious. He's easily by far the best thing about the first movie, because he's Bethany the entire time and he's great. Absolutely great. And Karen Gillan is amazing. I think she gets a lot more to do in this film than she got to do in the first film, and I really, really appreciated that, because she's a great, strong female character. Really loved her. I'm going to be honest. I think for the foursome this time around, Kevin Hart was probably my weakest part in the first film. The Rock is by far my weakest part, because it's because he's trying to do a Danny DeVito impression, but it's all over the place the whole time.
Let me stop you. He's doing an awful Danny DeVito.
It's all over the place.
No,
sometimes
it
works. Brian, sometimes it's okay.
It's awful. I think it's awful. I think he's doing an awful Danny DeVito. That's my opinion on the subject. Dude.
I don't think it's awful. I just think like the accent that he's going for, it's all over the place. I don't think the accent lands.
Hey, we can get the homestar over here to do a better Danny DeVito than that.
God in heaven.
Hey.
But once Awkwafina, once they shuffle the avatars around and Uncle Eddie gets into Awkwafina, she fucking just absolutely nails it. She's literally perfect. I love Awkwafina so fucking
blew it out
much.
Of the fucking water, like legit. But I mean, I loved the whole concept of going into a video game. Like I said, this is the first time I've watched one of these, and I liked that the movie was set at Christmas. Perfect time to release the movie around Christmas time for families to go check it out. The movie has some really weird jokes, though. I'm going to say that right at the forefront. Like, there's like a lot of ball jokes and stuff. And I'm like, I know it's PG-13, but like this movie's obviously marketed and made for families. And I'm like, there's a lot of talk about balls. And I'm like, this isn't the Epic Film Guys podcast. We have an explicit lyric style, like, you know,
the blood
stamp
with the balls in his mouth
right on our show. You know, that's a different story than like, is it more acceptable to talk about balls, penis, scrotum, asshole?
Maybe.
Dick, pussy, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to know, but this movie tends to do it in a very normal fashion where I guess we're not nearly as edgy as we thought we were. I don't know. Saucy, you watched this movie. You saw the original, in which you told me I didn't need to see after you saw it. You said it was perfectly fine. How did you walk out of this one?
I mean, yeah, I think it's good-natured fun for families, aside from a couple of very random, like, risque jokes that could have been very easily excised from the movie. I'm not complaining about that, of course, but I think it's good-natured fun for families for the most part. It's not stupid. It's not offensive. It's not boring. It's very mildly entertaining all the way through. On the other hand, it's not particularly memorable. It's not terribly engaging. It's not something that can't wait to be seen until it's available on streaming. Very largely how I felt about the first one. I think where this movie succeeds, and Welcome to the Jungle succeeded as well, is the cast. And I think the very wise choice was made this time around to have everyone play a different part this time around and have the avatar switched around. Because you do get Kevin Hart, who was very wild and manic in the first one because Fridge was in Kevin Hart's body in the original. Now you have Danny Glover. So whereas in the first one, Kevin Hart was playing a very chaotic, you know, he was a very chaotic presence and constantly shouting and screaming and all that kind of stuff. In this one, he's Danny Glover. And he just kind of talks very slow. And that's part of the joke.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he nails it, too. He fucking nails it. I really love Kevin Hart. I mean, until they shuffle the avatars back and he gets back to Fridge, because then it's just kind of Kevin Hart doing the Kevin Hart thing. And then I was like, aw.
Sure. But I think that was a nice change of pace, because in the first one, he's kind of typical Kevin Hart, where he's shouty and screamy and all of that. And in this one, we see a different side of Kevin Hart, a very relaxed, cool, calm, collected Kevin Hart, which I think we need to see more of, to be honest.
Well, I really loved all the, especially like the old person humor, you know, because there was like just constant running gags between Kevin Hart and The Rock where they just kept repeating stuff, like,
because they're senile.
Jumanji, yeah, because they're just old and senile. Like, they don't understand that they're in a video game. Like, that's played to really comedic effect for quite a bit of time in the film. It doesn't outstay its welcome, because they kind of move on from it, I think, by the end of the first act. But it's really, really entertaining. It's really,
am I the
really
only
fun.
One that wants to see a Milo and Eddie spinoff here? I mean, like,
well, no, you're not.
That worked the best for me in the film, too, was, I mean, you get that detention in the friendship between Milo and Eddie.
The Breakfast Club.
I wanted more of it. I honestly wanted more of it, because it's like, you think about these two actors who are both amazing, and we get only a little bit of glimpse of them performing together. And then we have other actors pretending to be them throughout most of the film. And I'm like, dude, both these guys are legends. And it's great to see them in a big movie like this. I mean, believe me, I just loved everything in the opening of this movie so much. And I was like, man, I'd love to see what happened before all this. Like, there was a moment later on the movie, and I don't mean to skip ahead or anything, guys, but at the end of the movie, they show a picture on the wall of like a younger Danny Glover and a younger Danny DeVito, like, together at their restaurant. And I was like, at Milo and Eddie's or whatever. And I'm like, I almost teared up, and I'm like, dude, they're saying something here. I mean, there's not a lot of depth in this movie, but they are really saying something about age in this movie. They really are.
They really are. And there's a nice theme about growing older and whatnot in the film. But the good thing about the film is It's not anything like super deep or super dramatic or anything like that, but it gives you enough, even in that opening of the film, it gives you enough of these characters so that their conflict transfers over into the game, and that when The Rock and Kevin Hart are filling those roles, that conflict doesn't feel out of place. It still feels very genuine. It still feels very real, as well as the resolution to it. I love the entire arc that basically Milo and Eddie have in the film, both as themselves and then as those characters. I really, really loved that. And one of the other things that I really, really loved, and I think you get even more of it in this film necessarily than maybe in the first one. I mean, the Jack Blackness of the first one aside, but I think you get a really, really good image, I would say, of the players as the avatars. Like, once they switch back to their normal forms, like, you see that change in the avatars where they're now the other characters. Like, Spencer's really, really quiet and really reserved and really nervous and all these different things. And I love that those mannerisms transfer over to The Rock once they switch back avatars. I mean, Jack Black as Bethany is like literally like that's like the whole one. And if you enjoyed this film, Justin, you should go back and watch the first one just because
it's hilarious.
And it's more of the same, and it's more of just Jack Black doing his amazing Jack Black thing. Jack Black in both of these movies is amazing. Is doing Fridge in this movie, he's amazing. And then when Bethany gets back into his body, it's even better.
Well, yeah, Jack Black is, as Loisaw said earlier on in pre-roll, a national treasure. Peter Jackson's King Kong aside, which we will not get into now because I'm right and Loisaw is 100% wrong about that. But he's amazing in this movie, and it's a shame to see that he's coming out in interviews while doing press for this movie and saying he's basically done with acting. I mean, you know, he's got his band, which tours around, which you can see all the time. He's a very talented guy, and he's kind of made his mark. I mean, I'd say he's a comedy legend. I'd say he's a legend in the film world. But for me, I got to get into some of the negatives here. Sure, the film's fun. It passes your time. If you're into some of the mindless entertainment we get year in and year out, but some of the animals in the CG in this movie look legit like, yo, it came right out of the original Jumanji. Some of the CG, like the ostriches in this movie, they just look awful. They look piss poor. I mean, there's some great shots in this movie, don't get me wrong, but a lot of the animals, like the hyenas that they constantly would show, I'm like, dude, that looks like fucking Doom from the original version on my computer. It just didn't look good. And I was like, you're going to give this movie this kind of budget with The Rock in it? And he's like a known name to bring in a lot of money. Now, Saucy, I'm not sure if you looked at the box office for this or not. I did not get an opportunity to do that, but usually his movies break even or do more than good. But in this case, the CG in this movie just looked very subpar when it came to the animals in a lot of the situations. Like the ostriches looked awful. The hyenas looked awful.
Well, see, I'm going to defend this the same way that I defended in the first film, because they're in a video game. And that's the thing that I love the most about it, because the physics of a video game, it's different. It's meant to be different. And that's why I love like the action. Like they can hit the side of a cliff and get thrown clear from a car and in a crash that definitely would have normally killed them. And,
but Nick,
you know, they survive,
Nick,
without a scratch. That's the great thing about both of these movies, I think, is they take place within a video game, so you can excuse some of those things. The effects,
I get that, but
honest to God, didn't bother me one bit. Honestly, didn't bother me at all.
But Nick, did you see it in 4K laser project?
No, I didn't. I saw it at the goddamn AMC. But I mean, nonetheless,
I didn't either. But my point was, the scene with, they're not baboons. They go out of their way to say they're not baboons. They're what? They're
monkeys.
Some other kind of monkey.
No,
yeah.
They're not fucking monkeys. Neither of y'all paid attention to what they said.
They're mandrills.
That's what it is. Whatever. That sequence, the CG looked great. The mandrills looked fucking amazing. But when it came to the hyenas and the ostriches, I'm like, why? I guess they're just spending the money where it needs to count in the right scenes, because that scene I thought was the most tense and entertaining, I guess, in quotes, chase sequence of the entire movie, where they were like held back by animals. Because we know from the original Jumanji, you guys got to look at my perspective on this. I'm a gigantic fan of the original Jumanji. I love that movie. I saw it in theaters. I own the 4K of it. as I should, because I wouldn't be the proper member of this podcast if I didn't say that I own the 4K Ultra HD of that movie.
Thank you for signing, Loisoff.
That scene looked great. I thought it was very well done, very well shot and everything. I just thought a lot of the animals looked piss poor.
So the CGI is inconsistent, you're saying?
I'm saying you're inconsistent.
Yeah, like I said, it didn't bother me. That's not what I was there for, and I expected it. You know, I didn't expect it to be like groundbreaking. I just went into it expecting to have a good time, and I did. I had a really good time with it. It was really, really fun. And I mean, once again, just solid performances from everybody in the cast. Like, Awkwafina, once she's Uncle Eddie, once Danny DeVito, once she's doing that Danny DeVito impression, literally fucking runs away with the film for me. Oh my God, she's fucking good. I love her.
Did you see The Farewell?
No, I did not.
You gotta see it. She gives one of the best performances of the year.
My market, man. Come on. You know my market.
Have you seen Crazy Rich Asians?
Yeah, she was my favorite part of Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay, there you go.
What you need to do from now on is just go into your theater and illegally record stuff for Nick to watch and not talk about it. And then you can.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Then just send him the phone vid. Guys, do not condone illegally recording films in movie theaters.
Just send him the phone vid and be like, there, now I'm not going to ask you, like, did you see this? Did you see that?
I'm just asking because
it'd be a shitty cam version and I wouldn't watch it anyway. So
no, I'm just kidding. You've watched plenty of fucking shitty cam versions.
I haven't watched a cam recorded movie in God.
I forgot the last one, but it has been a while.
Yeah. 10 years probably, maybe even more.
I gotta admit though, I wanna give you guys a huge shout out and I wanna thank the both of you for kinda making me go see this movie, because otherwise I would probably not have gone to see it. And overall, like, being completely honest, I had a lot of fun with this movie. It had a lot of great adventure moments. For old school gamers, it definitely felt like an old school game. It wasn't like so high tech or over the top where I wouldn't be able to connect to it. And as you said perfectly, Nick, the performances were all really good, if not great. And I mean, the cast has a great chemistry here, and you can tell. I don't know about Nick Jonas being in the mix. Is he in the first one?
He's in the first one, yep.
He's in the first one.
Okay. He just looks too attractive to be in this movie to me. I don't know what it is.
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
I don't think everyone else is like kind of, you know, okay in the movie, but then it's like he shows up and he's like,
you're looking at Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who's a superhuman, and then you look at
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan is like one of the most beautiful women alive. Like how are
yeah,
you not?
We may differ on that subject, but Dwayne, I'm only looking at his pecs, his triceps, biceps, and deltoids. I'm not giving a fuck about anything else. I'm just saying, like, he I didn't know he's in the movie, and then Colin Hanks is in the movie. That whole side story came out of nowhere for me and was like kind of shoehorned in,
yeah,
or whatever.
I think that was maybe the only thing you would have needed to see the first film for, is the context of Bethany going to him in order to, you know, get into the game to help her friends.
So his character apparently was stranded there for a long time, just like Alan Parrish was.
Yes, and Bethany saves his life in the film. So when he returned, well, I don't want to spoil it. So yes, basically, he's the Alan Parrish character, quote unquote, of Welcome to the Jungle, even though Alan Parrish also existed in this continuity. But I did feel like that was a little odd. I felt like they needed a way to introduce Nick Jonas's character back into the movie. So they kind of clumsily left Bethany behind for some reason. The film never explains why she doesn't get sucked into the game, but she doesn't get sucked into the game so she can go find Colin Hanks and then he can be Nick Jonas's avatar in the film. So it's a little clumsy the way that's handled. I don't think the film cares.
It also doesn't in the first film. There's no, like, the Awkwafina character doesn't exist. Like, that isn't one of the player characters that you can choose in the game.
Neither is the horse, which I also thought that was a little odd too.
Yeah, the horse was also weird.
Well, Nick, let's throw this to you right now, because you're the gamer of the show. You're a huge gamer. You've been a gamer since you were a fucking kid. How many games do you purchase or you play where you're like, I get to pick a horse? I mean, seriously.
It was very random.
It was really random. I don't know. I mean, I guess they thought they could make a funny joke out of it because Kevin Hart was still doing the Danny Glover I'm a zoologist thing, which was a funny running gag through the, because he was explaining all the different traits of the animals, which, like I said, that was funny. But like I said, I enjoyed the film.
And he can talk to animals.
I don't, you know, it is what it is. I'm just going to stick a 7 out of 10 on it. It was a good, enjoyable time at the movies. If you enjoyed the first one, unless you're Kev Brackett, who for some reason hated this movie, but loved the,
I can't believe the first one.
Like, it has the same exact enjoyment rating and enjoyment factor. It is more of the same. It's not trying to do anything different or whatever, but it's solid performances. Like I said, I love that, you know, the character through lines are there. You can definitely see the avatars in the game carrying over those traits of their real life player counterparts. I really, really love that. And I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. It was really, really enjoyable. And I just, like, I wish Rhys Darby were in the film more.
Yeah.
I fucking love Rhys Darby, but...
And I wish that
I love that Danny they brought Glover, that whole non-player character thing back, though, because that was a big thing in the first one where it was, they would talk to non-player characters and then they would just repeat lines of dialogue over and over because, again, they're non-player characters in the game. So they only have a set number of things they say. And that's it.
Right.
I love that. I'm putting 7 out of 10 on it. 7 out of 10.
Give me more Danny DeVito. Give me more Danny Glover and Kev Brackett. What in the hell? You're treating this movie like I'm treating Black Christmas. Not even the same kind of movie.
Put a number on it, damn it.
6 out of 10 for me. Perfect movie to watch at the end of your Sunday afternoon with your family. Like I said, feed them bitches McDonald's. Watch them fall asleep and just sit there. Sip a whiskey drink.
My pee-pee one night.
And be like, yo, this is entertaining. I'm seeing some giant monkeys beat up some dudes. Jack Black's spouting off at the mouth like he's a black guy.
I will also give Jumanji The Next Level a 6 out of 10. A perfectly acceptable way to kill 2 hours of your time. It's
fun.
Breezily enjoyable. Largely tension-free, but you get to see a neat action sequence in which Karen Gillan uses nunchucks to absolutely demolish a whole squad of goons. You get to laugh a few times. It passed the, as the great Mark Kermode puts it, the 6 laugh test for me. If you chuckle more than 6 times in a comedy, you're in good hands. So 6 out of 10 for me for Jumanji, The Next Level.
All right. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to do it for us for this episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Stay tuned for the Monday sode. Ladies and gentlemen, announcements about the upcoming 4th annual live stream for The Cure, the live stream number 4, The Cure. Ha ha ha. And information about the Epic Film Guys Fitness Challenge, which returns in January 2020. Make sure you head over to the Hopesters Dumpster, our Facebook group. Head to the page, click the link to join the group. Get over there because you're going to want to get signed up for the Epic Film Guys Fitness Challenge so it can kick off in January. But Loisos, if they just stumbled in here blind drunk, just like Justin is, and they want to know where they can find us, if they want to subscribe to us, where can they find us out there on the web?
You can find us wherever good podcasts are to be found. Spotify,
bad podcasts, iTunes.
That's absolutely correct. Podbean, etc. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really, really helps us out. We appreciate that. And you can follow us on social media at Epic Film Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and the Insta, as the kids call it.
And if you want to get closer to the sauce, you want to get closer to opening that button on his jeans, maybe getting even deeper down there, you can get onto the Hopesters Dumpster. That's our official fan group.
Jesus Christ.
Like the Facebook, and then you get in that group, and you may even have your chance at getting something good.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We appreciate you so, so much for taking a little bit of your day to tune into the Epic Film Guys.
I swear I'm sober. I'm sober, I swear.
Jesus Christ. Wait.
Oh, good for there you. We go.
Which is exactly what a sober person would say.
Exactly. So we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so, so much for listening. Don't miss the Monday sode. A lot of big news dropping. And for myself, for Drunky McDrunkerson, and for the God of Fuck. God fucking damn it. Until next time.
I'm Batman.
I mean, I'm sorry, I fucked that up.
Oh my god.
Daddy's my gonna name spank is... you with the belt now.
Fuck, I can't even I haven't drank that this much. I've just been drinking water this whole time.
All staying in.
Fuck y'all. Seriously. Saucy, you're, not my you're the dad. God. You're the one that runs everything here. Stop looking at me that way.
Jesus Christ.
Oh!
It's been a while since we've gotten Justin this drunk on a show. It's nice.
I'm not. Why do you guys keep saying drunk? I'm not drunk.
How dare you?
Thank you, Paul.
I just did not eat any dinner, okay? Do not hate on me for not eating dinner.
You're not my fucking mother!
It's better than the dinner that Loy Sauce had, which is probably consisting of gummy bears, Sour Patch Kids, popcorn, and whatever the fuck else he has.
All melted together in a big ball.
There it is.
Mm.
Thank you so much out there, everybody, for listening. Until next time,
we will see you
at the movie.
Don't choke on that dick too hard, motherfucker.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
We can take it again if you want.
0.0.
We can let's take it again. One more time.
We'll save that, though, for something.
Until next time,
we will see you
at the movies.